Hey, everybody, live from Austin, Texas. You're in the green room. This is the pre-show before South By. Anyway, so we're here with some amazing guests. We're going to introduce them and ask them where they're coming in from. And real quickly, what are we talking about today? So Chirag Mehta, where are we calling in from and what are we talking about?
I'm the newly minted analyst for Constellation Research, and I'm going to be focusing on cybersecurity and next generation platforms. So we'll all be talking about that.
Oh, good. Maybe we'll keep you in and have you join in. Very, very cool. All right. Well, let's go through our other guests here. Rhonda Vettieri, tell us where you're coming from and what are we talking about?
Thank you, Ray. Calling in from Greenwich, Connecticut. Today, we're talking about how to manage successful transformations and also what we're seeing with artificial intelligence, the ripple effect, and how we can all work together.
All right. Very, very true. Thank you. Teresa, where are you coming in from?
Hey, everybody. Teresa Carlson coming in with the grip from the great and always exciting city of Washington, D.C., and I'm going to be talking about the parallels of adoption between cloud computing and artificial intelligence.
Oh, very, very cool. David, where are you coming in from?
Yes, joining Teresa from the wonderful place of Washington, D.C., and really excited with our guests to be talking about AI, society, what do we do about the eroding trust in AI at the moment, and most importantly, leadership.
Very, very cool. All right, with that, back over to you, Elle. We can do the count. We'll get ready for the show.
All right, 3, 2, 1.
Thank you for joining us on Disrupt TV. My name is Vala Afshar. I'm the Chief Digital Evangelist at Salesforce and your co-host for the next hour. We welcome you to follow us on X at Disrupt TV Show. Send Ray, myself, and our guests your questions live using hashtag Disrupt TV, and we'll do our best to answer them in the next hour. It's my pleasure to introduce my co-host, Ray Wong. He's the CEO and founder of Constellation Research. He is the best-selling author of Everybody Wants to Rule the World. I see Ray on TV just about every day on Fox Business, Yahoo Finance, Bloomberg, CNBC. He's, in my opinion, one of the top futurists to follow on X at RWA and G0. Welcome, Ray Wong, to Disrupt TV.
Hey, thanks a lot. I'm here with my amazing co-host, Vala. Darn, as everybody knows, he's a multi-author. He's put out multiple books, and more importantly, this latest book, Boundless, A New Mindset for Unlimited Business Success, is one of the bestsellers on Amazon and a must-read for executives around the world. But more importantly, everybody follows him for his inspirational and innovative, insightful tweets. And when he's not hosting, keynoting, or leading events at Salesforce, you can find him on business outlets like Bloomberg, and more importantly, his column on ZDNet, which is read by millions of people around the world. But you know what? It's not about us. It's about our amazing guests up here, and more importantly, what their insights are. So who do we have to kick off today's interesting panel format?
Ray, we have three luminaries and business and technology experts. So if the audience would allow me, I'd like to introduce all three guests because we're going to have them all on our next segment. We'll start with Teresa Carlson, a General Catalyst Advisor, Finch AI Board Member, Investor, Kimura and Karat Board Member, Non-Executive Chair of Night Swan, Vice Chair of White House Historical Association, and Investor. Teresa has spent over 20 years helping, she started when she was in her teens, helping governments around the world drive digital transformation, leading Amazon's web services worldwide public sector business and Microsoft Federal Business prior. Teresa founded AWS's worldwide public sector business in 2010 and led its growth to include over 5,000 government agencies, 10,000 education institutions, and 28,000 nonprofit organizations as its clients. In 2020, Teresa's role expanded to financial services, energy services, telecommunications, aerospace, and satellite industry business units. Teresa also served as president and chief commercial officer at Flexport, a leader in supply chain management and logistics, and prior president at Splunk. Teresa serves as officer for the Economic Club of Washington, D.C., and the vice chair of the White House Historical Association. She also serves a board member, executive committee member of the Atlantic Council, and a board member of the Pentagon Memorial Fund. Teresa, I'm sorry I had to cut your bio short. We only have an hour. You've done a lot. Welcome to Disrupt TV.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. With Teresa, we have Rhonda Viteri, a global C-suite executive and an athlete herself, maybe the top athlete we've ever had on our show. Rhonda applies mental model and out of the office guide how she leads her life with others around her. She's a corporate athlete. Rhonda is an active leader where she spearheads corporate initiatives around the world, competing in Ironman 70.3, I believe that's 70 miles triathlon, racing across America and mentoring students and athletes globally. Rhonda has worked across industries as a CIO, Chief Information and Chief Technology Officer, Global Executive Digital Transformation Change Agent at companies, you know, small companies like Santander, Estee Lauder, HP Enterprise, Barclays, JP Morgan.
Only for
small guys. Small institutions. Rhonda serves on boards as a global strategic advisor to companies around the globe. She's spoken at Davos multiple years. In fact, we were fortunate to interview Rhonda live at Davos this year. She's an author of Grit and Grind, a must-read book for anyone who's looking to achieve their full potential. And she's coming back to Disrupt TV. So thank you so much for coming back, Rhonda.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Great to have you. And of course, we have Dr. David Bray. Anyone who's familiar with Disrupt TV is familiar with Dr. David Bray. But just in case, Dr. Bray is a distinguished fellow at the Stimson Center, as well known and also a non-resident distinguished fellow and business executive at National Security. He's a principal at Lead Do Adapt Ventures, and he has served in a variety of leadership roles during turbulent times, including bioterrorism preparedness and response, executive director for Bipartisan National Commission on R&D, and with the U.S. Special Operations Command, J5 director, facing challenges and countering disinformation online. Dr. Bray has received both the Joint Civilian Service Commendation Award and the National Intelligence Exceptional Achievement Medal. Business Insider named Dr. Bray as one of the top 24 Americans who are changing the world under the age 40. And he was named Young Global Leader by the World Economic Forum. Welcome back, David, to Disrupt TV.
Thanks for having me, Vala and Ray. And thanks. I'm really excited to be here with Rhonda and Teresa because they're really impressive.
This is David, amazing. You are impressive.
Oh, well, Teresa actually, can I say, I actually worked in for like with 10 different years as she scaled AWS. And so she's definitely impressive. And Rhonda, when we met in Davos, the remarks you said and the insights, I look forward to hearing more of them here too as well.
Thank you. We as well.
You
know, we're really excited to have everyone here. This is AI trends, society, and leadership. And I think it's really important to think about how AI advancements are really impacting leadership in our changing world. Let's start with you, Teresa, real quick. What are some of the secrets in your success in helping, the government adopt cloud technologies? I mean, like that just sounds hard enough. First of all, getting cloud right. Two, getting the government to move fast enough into the cloud. And then third, of course, making sure like no one's left behind when you do it. So talk a little bit about that, Teresa.
Well, first of all, if it's not hard, it's not worth doing, right? So you know the stuff when you're changing the world, when you're doing disruptive things, you know that it's going to be pretty hard. And I will say the key in working with governments is truly radical collaboration. You have to work with governments as a partner. I think so many companies want to approach government, especially big tech companies, and tell government what to do. And they need to be listening to what government needs and then putting together solutions that help them do the absolute best job they can. And I will tell you kind of a funny story, because from 2000 to 2010, I was at Microsoft running federal, and I'd be on Capitol Hill. I talked to congressional leaders. And then I went over to AWS in 2010, and really no one even knew what cloud computing was then. And I would go to Capitol Hill, and I would walk into a congressional leader that I'd known for years, and it's, "Oh, Teresa, you're at Amazon. Are you here to talk about books or taxes?" And I was like, "Neither. We're talking about cloud computing." And they literally would say, "I don't know what cloud is." And it was an opportunity to really get governments to think differently about the way they use technology. And I will say, in the early days, it was almost like they were looking at voodoo when they saw what you could do in cloud, that you could spin up an instance, that you could create a data center. And the experimentation was off the charts, because David knows this really well. He's been a CIO numerous times, worked with government. And we both have such a deep appreciation, but they just didn't have the ability to experiment with tech. They had to go out and buy servers, wait for them to get there, set them up, configure them with the security designs, and their ability to try out architectures and designs just wasn't present. And so when cloud computing showed up and government employees and integrators started using it, it really was a complete game changer. And it was such an honor to be able to do the work that we did with government. And it's still moving, but just the early days of getting cloud, it's about radical collaboration, listening to your customers, designing solutions that they can use. And oh, by the way, let's not forget, it's about interoperability and integration of systems they already have, because if you tell them to rip and replace, that's a total showstopper.
I'd like to, that's, by the way, amazing advice. And for those of you listening, you're truly listening to trailblazers and pioneers who at the time, all three of you throughout your careers, you've had to help people challenge dominant logic, because in the early 2000s, dominant logic was, you're not going to put your most important asset, like your customer data, into this thing called cloud. Like, you're right, it was voodoo discussions. And coincidentally, today is the 25th year anniversary of my company. My company was founded March 8th, 1999. And putting your enterprise CRM in the cloud, those discussions were quite spirited 25 years ago. And so I want to level set as you guide our listeners to this new era, because certainly cloud computing in early 2000s, social networking with Facebook in 04 and Twitter in 06, you know, this thing was introduced in 07. So like bring your own device revolution was launched with this incredible device. All of these things, cloud, social, mobile, they were all scary. And there was a lack of trust for all of these technologies, again, because we were challenging dominant logic. And now today, the biggest top of mind, regardless of which sector, which company, is artificial intelligence. And latest research, Edelman Research, points to trust in AI technology, and companies that develop AI tech solutions is dropping, and dropping fast. 5 years ago, the trust in US for AI solutions was around 50% of business respondents. Now it's 35%. Globally, we've seen a 61% trust drop to 53%. So we're seeing double-digit drop in terms of trust in AI. And unlike cloud and mobile and social, this is redefining computing, because in the 20 years of cloud, mobile, and social, really hardware and software was designed to retrieve information, and now it's retrieving and generating new. So the reason NVIDIA is at $1,000 a share or close, or companies like mine, which is an AI CRM company, we're not just retrieving information, we're now designing software and hardware to retrieve and generate in real time, which will be the electricity for 21st century. So Teresa, as you're trying to convince now business leaders to think about, like they used to think about cloud, now AI, how do you, with radical transparency, open up their eyes and minds and their hearts to something that is, in my humble opinion, going to massively impact how businesses operate in the future?
Well, you know the old book, people don't like their cheese moved, right? You know, that's kind of that oldie but goodie. But it is, I will go back to, for lots of groups and enterprises, and I'm going to speak more to the enterprise level and large government, large enterprises. That's my area of expertise. But you have to let them experience it in the right way. And I know that may sound simplistic, but there is a lot of conversation about AI. But even today, when you really walk in and get into those detailed conversations with those executives and the IT leaders, they still really don't have a strategy or a plan 100% baked on how they want to roll out or use artificial intelligence. And what I used to tell everybody in cloud, and it worked, was experimentation, right? There's no real algorithm for experimentation. You need to get in there and really do it. And whatever it is, if it's cafeteria management or whatever else, you have to operationalize what you're doing. So that's number one. And that's important. And the teaching, training, and education of this, I just can't underscore enough, because people talk about, at your point, at a very high level still, and you got to break it down into the parts and pieces that are meaningful for them. The other thing about large enterprises and governments in particular, I know David is so aware of this, you cannot do a lot without security and compliance configurations. And I'm an advocate of responsible AI. I really believe that. I know a lot of people say break things, do it as quick as you can, but that really is not a real, it may be reality when you're trying to develop quickly, but it will not work at all when you're trying to implement with companies and businesses and regulated industries. You have to have an operational model that people can snap into. And in the federal government, as an example, they have a model that y'all probably heard of that was created for cloud called FedRAMP. And then that is a corollary with the Defense Department's IL criteria. And then as you move up the stack in more classified areas, you have other controls, things you have to do in a more classified setting. But the reason that's important is because you need guidelines for people. It is so important. Otherwise, guess what happens? They talk about it a lot, but they actually do nothing. Or they do it in small ways to get away with it, and then they get in trouble because they were using it. So you have to have a programmatic approach to how you get the AI actually moving and adopted. Now, that doesn't go into the human side of fear and what could happen, and all those things have to be addressed. And we are going to see more and more regulation out there, for sure. I think there's no way to get around it. Where we are in the government efforts of this right now, politically, because we're kind of in between elections, I don't know how quickly we could get things passed. So we may see adoption in like these increments of adoption until we actually have a coalition of individuals who can pass something. And then if they don't pass something, the technology companies, the large tech companies, they may suffer a bit, or they may not. They may keep growing at a rate and speed, and then there'll be regulation passed. They'll say, I went too far. Now I got to back off. So we're in kind of a weird period right now of actually what's going to occur with the adoption with large enterprises and governments.
Yeah, we're going to need a lot more staff for lunch and learns. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
But that's kind of where we're headed. I want to see disrupt TV staff for lunch and learns.
Ray, it's funny you say that, but I have several large company invites where they're hosting, believe it or not, lunch and learn sessions where I walk in and talk about specific use cases of generative AI in sales, service, marketing, commerce. I have probably 10 on my calendar. So there's definitely educational events sponsored by companies where they want to see real use cases. So Teresa's comment about experimentation, education, and safety and security is top of mind, at least with the clients that I'm working with.
Well, they're doing this for the House and the Senate right now, to your point. They're doing lunch and learns, educational sessions. They are doing these right now. So to your point, they have to start somewhere.
Yeah, well, they need to. I mean, look at their age. They don't even know what AI means. Let's just call a spade a spade. The education of it, the age, that when Sam Altman went in front of them and actually did an education May and June of last year, Ray and I were both on Fox and Friends talking about, and actually had a call to rally, let's educate Congress and Senate. Let's get ahead of this. By the way, coming from the corporate sector, doing 23 mergers and acquisitions, we know what it takes for cloud, data, don't forget that buzzword, and now AI, to educate And I am so passionate about this because we are at a pinnacle point of this is, we need to get ahead of this and conserve humanity. I mean, let's get really, really focused on this and educate. So these lunch and learns aren't just for companies. They're for the political government office. And I'm so passionate about this, Teresa. They needed to be educated 10 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, we definitely need a lot of those lunch and learns. And that's part of the transition. And we all know that's kind of how it is in the corporate environment, which is different than the public sector environment. And I think there's some lessons learned there from your help, Rhonda, helping companies move along these new technologies.
Big companies.
You talk about these big companies, big apparatuses, some of them legacy companies, not like new or high-tech companies that have been around for hundreds of years, right? And you talk about this in your book, Grit and Grind, but I'll start with this question. I mean, what are the secrets of success, right? How do you get these leaders in these Fortune 500 companies to first get into the buy-in and second of all, getting the team and the staff rallied behind you, especially around technologies that might seem scary? I mean, AI might seem really scary, maybe 10 times as scary as the cloud compared to where people were starting out before.
And it is, Ray. Thanks for asking. It is scary. The cloud was scary. Cyber is scary. Anything threat, risk. You look at the risk table. So how do you get people on board? Let's educate them. That's why you sense my passion. What is the problem we're trying to solve? Let's bring everyone on the journey. Let's not wait until it's too late and we all become obsolete. Let's get ahead of it. So I sit on several boards, very passionate about educating boards, bringing items forward and actually saying, let's educate, let's bring the company. It's right in the performance plans. Get 8% of your budget associated with innovation. So you're ahead of the times 10 years. Remember when the Oculus glasses, we were looking at that, the Silicon Valley over years ago. And now we're like, that's obsolete in our head. But to some people, it's new, right? We as leaders need to stay ahead of that and continue to bring these to the board, to the executive committee. And oh, by the way, Vala, lunch and learns and Ray, bring your top talent to tech companies ahead of time, to Google, Facebook, bring your board, get ahead of it. And carve that time out. I always hear people say, I don't have time. Well, guess what? Who's your leader? Make the time because you pay it now or pay it later. Or people will say they talk about it, but they can't do it. There's also, you need to look at leaders, Ray, that have done it, can execute and not just have the vision.
Yeah, it's true. And I have to say, it's more than undergraduate learning with AI. I feel like when you... Very quickly, when they observe the power of the capabilities, and it's not just generative, it could be machine learning from a natural language processing to computer vision to smart robotics, all the different variety of branches under the AI umbrella. The conversations lead to data, as you mentioned. So I find that amalgamation of data is certainly first step. So you have consent and privacy and sharing rules, unlike the consumer side of ChatGPT when they just took everything without consent. That doesn't work in the enterprise. So you have certainly governance and rules that define the amalgamation of data, but then the metadata and the polymorphic nature of how objects are created to use the data and all the hyper automation that's built on the metadata. So the conversations become really deep, really fast. And you realize, I think my customers are starting to realize super powerful, but there is a skills gap that needs to be addressed.
Yes.
And the power is such that it's radically going to change the way we work. Radically. I mean, my 13-year-old is avidly using generative AI. And it scares me because I'm not I'm not always there watching how he's using it. But I know he is. So when people ask me what's the next big thing, I always say, well, whatever's adopted most. And there's nothing in our lifetime that's been adopted more so than this technology we're talking about. What are some of the social ripple effects that, Rhonda, you think may come as a result of, again, not just retrieval of information, but generation of information in real time, knowing, most of us now have a supercomputer in our pocket. Although I just came back from Mobile World Congress, only to find out 3.4 billion people do not have internet access.
Yes.
So
yes.
We're still at the 50%, it's about 8 billion total. We're still around the you know, 55-45%. So we're certainly a privileged few who get to talk about these cool technologies, but again, one in two have yet to experience even the internet. So there's a lot for us to experience in the next decade. Your thoughts on the social impact of these technologies?
Well, the social app aspect, we saw it from the wellness, right? When the iPhone first came out, I'm all about the health and wellness perspective. This is just going to kick in even more. And this is also close because I just want to make sure also that the profit from AI and these tech giants, to be specific, and other ones that are popping up, that we get ahead and that the profit doesn't overtake the humanity, right? Yeah. We can't lose the humanity aspect of what is happening in the world. So I'm very, very big proponent on the ripple effect for all generations. Let's not lose sight of humanity. The risk and compliance, Teresa mentioned, we're in a weird place. We are with the election right now, right? The AI, the generations, the ballots, the falsity of things that can lead the polls from a social perspective, but also we see it in education, right? I'm a full believer, being a corporate athlete, Ironman, and doing results, you show up to perform. You do it yourself. Now, does someone enable you to perform in a race? No, you have to perform. We don't have AI to do that, even though Moonwalkers is coming out with a new shoe, to be precise, $1,300 a pair that you can put on and start running, but you'll get disqualified in a race. But that's another example of AI and what's embarking on the human aspect. For corporations, the ripple effect's going to be the following. Who's going to be able to identify very quickly, if they haven't already, if you haven't, you're already behind, who you need to upskill? Bottom line, what's your career job path framework right now? And let's talk about it and be transparent to the workforce. We're going to identify socially within our company who we're going to upskill. Let's ring fence it and let's talk about it and make, guess what, a safe haven for psychological safety, Vala and Ray, because everyone wants to know, is my job going away? Right? And let's take away that anxiety of people. And as a leader, I'm a proponent of that transparency across the company. And that is one of the aspects I will continue to be a human leader and say, I'm going to bring it forward. Let's have the hard conversations. We're going to upskill. Here's where AI can benefit for and not be so clunky and scared to raise point. Let's invest in it at the board. Let's make it human. And this is what it means to this company. Every company is different. That's why I love to bring the expertise of 23 of these big, as you said, gigantic companies and talk about it, Vala, because every company operates differently with guardrails and framework. Of course, you have the cyber and what you need to report out for your SOX compliance. I don't want to say that lightly, but every company is at a different pivotal point on their journey. Now it's AI transformation, right? It was cloud, it was data, it was digital, but AI is just a component. There's still more digital going on.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point. And we're thinking about where you insert humans in the process. That human-centric view is really important. And we start a lot of the AI conversations today by talking about where and when do you insert a human in that process, which gets to this really shift that's actually happening here. Now, one of the things that's also changing is really like these environments are typically not the most, you know, exciting environments, innovative environments, or places to go out and try new things, because you're not rewarded for creating risk. You're rewarded for mitigating risk and getting to operational efficiencies. So I'm going to go to David now and really talking about what's going on. I mean, given your experiences in some of the most amazing scenarios, from crisis response to 911, bioterrorism, 4 years as an award-winning CEO at the FCC, doing disinformation, countering disinformation work, special forces, and of course, working on people-centered internet initiatives. I'm going to start with this, right? What do you have to do to get the right leadership, especially in environments where you're not supposed to take risk, right? And especially when you're dealing with, a lot of like uncertainty, like you're in uncharted waters and you are highly visible and being targeted. Like, how do you handle that? That just doesn't sound like fun, actually. Now that I'm reading
that's a good question. And I first will say that I personally love uncertain, ambiguous environments. But I recognize not everyone feels comfortable with that, and it's definitely not rewarded in some cases. And I think if I could build on what both Teresa and Rhonda was saying, it's almost like you have to go in with what's called deployment empathy. Because what you're unleashing into the organization is going to create, you know, Teresa said nobody likes to have their cheese moved. That's absolutely true. You know, everybody says they want change. They just don't want to change themselves. And then Rhonda was talking about how, you know, this is seismic with AI. It's not just a change in the back office functions. It's not just a change in how the company is processing data. This is actually changing fundamentally how the company works. And there's a whole lot of angst amongst employees because they're like, am I going to lose my job? Because unfortunately, we've had a lot of headlines that say anywhere between 35 to 50% of jobs are going to be lost, which we'll see if that actually happens or not. But then two, because of the rate at which the re-education has to happen, a lot of people are like, how am I going to get it? Do I have the money to go do it? Do I have the time to do this? While I'm also taking care of my family and my mortgage and possibly my elder care. All sorts of angst are happening. And so in some respects, what AI is, it's this seismic, I would say it's almost a seismic grenade that has gone off that is calling into question how we work, how we live, how we operate in society. And then to Teresa's point, we're not seeing the questions being presented by those who are possibly policymakers for various reasons. They're partly still trying to figure it out and they don't want to, you know, they don't want to get ahead of it. At the same time, companies are trying to rethink, well, how do we do the business of companies? They're not really thinking about how do we do the business of societies. And then the social contract for people that may be displaced by what this technology does is not really been worked out. And we know there's unfortunately, you saw what was called to attention recently in the last few weeks with Taylor Swift, but that's been going on, unfortunately, sadly, for years, where people were having their images or their likeness misused and abused online that was catastrophically harmful. And so in some respects, AI is a technology that, yes, it can be used to improve what companies do and improve what governments do, but sadly, it can also harm people. And so there's a lot of things in the mix that are happening at once. And I think it's worth allowing people to sort of pause and breathe and say, we've been here sort of before, where there was rapid technological progress in a time in human history, US history specifically, where there's a rise of mega corporations. There was also a rise of people that from the private sector waded into politics. There was also a lot of disinformation during this time. It's how newspapers sold their headlines. And the US may have gone to war with Spain over a disinformation event. Remember the Maine. And the Congress was actually slightly more polarized back then than it is now. Now, so it's worth asking that maybe societies like ours that are free and open, when you have rapid technological progress, back then it was the first Gilded Age and it was the steam engine and telegraph and everything else. Now we're seeing the convergence with AI meets data, meets quantum, meets space, meets bio, rapid technological revolutions that are happening. That can create social angst because it's rethinking how do you govern, how do you coexist, how do you work? And I think the way you can help sort of provide a non-anxious presence amidst that is to think through what do people need, whether as employees, whether as individuals in the public space, what do they need to feel like it's going to be okay, even if we exactly don't know how it's going to end up 5 to 10 years from now? Because I guarantee you, anyone who tells you how AI is going to change how we live 10 years from now is probably wrong.
Come on, futurists need jobs too. Come on.
I think anything beyond 3 years is probably just rolling the dice, but that's just me. But
it's true. I agree with you. There's five of us, and we're very fortunate because we have access to R&D labs. You're a VC. You advise large companies. So all five of us are witness to the technology and how it's being built. I've been in tech for 30 years. I've never seen anything like it. To a point where I think it needs to be a human right. I haven't said that about the internet or the phone or social networks. I don't know how you compete. I don't know how you compete in an algorithmic based, more decentralized, hyper-connected knowledge sharing economy if you don't have affordable, scalable access to AI. I just don't see it.
Brian Johnson says, we won't be doing anything. The blueprint guy says, he says, all our job is going to be is to exist. That we won't have any other job. I'm like, I don't know if I just want to live to just exist. Right. I'm not like her triathlete. I'd like to be, but I want some purpose for why I exist.
Absolutely. 100%. 100%. So I agree with David. Experts of the past are not experts of the future. Things are just the velocity, speed, and direction is unlike anything I've ever seen. My son is 13. I absolutely believe when he leaves graduate school, not undergraduate, graduate school. So at age around 20,
well, graduate schools exist. Just wondering.
Well, that's a good point. But let's say 10 years from now, I'm just trying to frame it. 13 to 23, he will work with digital employees. He may have a digital boss, meaning there's an algorithm that monitors his performance. So I'm not worried about his job being displaced by a machine. I believe it's more likely that folks will have jobs threatened by individuals who are very comfortable learning new technologies, adapting hardware and software to do their jobs faster and smarter. I just think that the nature of computing is changed. And so it should probably call augmented intelligence. I don't know.
Really, I would say artificial. Additive. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. There's nothing artificial about it. It's getting faster and smarter and more useful every day. So just like all the emerging tech we talked about, again, we're talking to pioneers that were pushing technology 20 years ago that scared everyone. Nobody thought cloud was going to be a thing in 2000. those same folks concerned about AI, it's like Clay Christensen's book, Innovator's Dilemma, where he had a line in it that said, you may hate gravity, but gravity doesn't care. I think you could substitute some of the tech we've been talking about with gravity. David, go ahead.
You can't fight gravity, to your point.
You can't fight gravity. It's going to happen whether you like it or not. And sort of, I think, Viola, to build on what you're saying and to loop in some of what Teresa and Rhonda were talking about, that idea that we have to have empathy for the seismic change that's happening.
Yes.
You know, I think unlike some of the past techs that occurred, and you talked about AI possibly being human, I would say in free societies, if you don't have some way of influencing how your data speaks for you, you've lost your voice. Mm-hmm. You see, nobody's having that conversation about who are not present and having their voices. And, you know, for better or for worse, there may have been companies that are kind of Napster-like in how they may have launched their AI, if you remember. And we have yet to see the iTunes model. At the same time, what AI does is it does a lot of realistic-looking content, which is both great for businesses, but also realistic-looking inauthentic content is awful for how it pulls apart and polarizes society. It can damage brands, it can damage reputations, it can damage societies. And so we may need to see the rise of new solutions from, whether it's from the private sector or from nonprofits, because government is not going to, you know, you can't have government start doing the determination of this is truth, this is not truth. That won't work. So we've got to figure out what are new models to help people deal with the inauthenticity that Gen AI will be possibly able to produce that may hurt people. And then I guess the last thing is, you know, as you look at it, this does change how value is created. Yes. And usually when revolutions happen, technological revolutions happen, there's a very lopsided distribution where very few benefit from it, and eventually it gets democratized to everybody. But we have multiple revolutions going on. If this changes how value gets created, how do you make sure those that may not necessarily be the most technology savvy or those that aren't, you know, at the front line of what AI is doing also find ways to have value created to provide for their families?
I agree. I just a fairly respectable venture capitalist talked about when the refrigerator was invented, most experts thought the companies that produced refrigerators were going to be the most valuable, most known brands in the world. And it ended up being Coca-Cola. So AI is a tool, and you're right, we're not going to be able to predict the next 3 years, 5 years, 10, but some of the largest companies in the world may be the folks that found out how to best use refrigeration to bring their products to the world.
Use the tool as opposed to be the tool, or do things with people as opposed to people. Yes.
Exactly. And Vala, I think it's important that when folks think of AI, they don't think of it as a weapon. Start to learn, just so you can demystify things.
Totally.
We are in the age of AI. It's probably one of the biggest things. I think the World Economic Forum got it wrong. It wasn't digital. It wasn't that
right.
The fourth industrial revolution. It's really AI. The digitization is what got us to AI. It was kind of the transition between the internet and where we are today. And so we've had some amazing perspectives here with Teresa Carlson, Rhonda Vettieri, and Dr. David Bray. Thank you so much for being here on the show. And of course, to all the viewers. We're trending like 1,800 viewers right now live. This is crazy. Normally we get like 50 to 100,000 like after the show.
That's because that's the fastest 40 minutes of my week. We could have talked to you on the show. 2 hours. Thank you. You're amazing.
And we're gonna transition and talk about another amazing topic, but we'll catch you guys in the green room. Thanks for being here and happy Friday.
Thank you.
Friday. Happy International Women's Day too.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Oh my God, what's going on here? Let's bring on our next guest. He's gonna be talking about something that's very mild, I guess.
Yeah. Well, this is typically our cleanup hitter spot where the guest comes and hits a grand slam. So good luck, Chirag.
Well, not just a grand slam, maybe a cycle, you know,
Right. That would be great. Chirag Mehta is vice president and principal analyst, newest member of the Constellation research team, focusing on cybersecurity, next generation application development, and product-led growth. Anybody who's been following Chirag, he's been an executive at, again, small companies like Google and SAP and Oracle, you know, some incredible technology companies. Over 25 years of experience, Chirag has built and he's shipped and he's marketed and sold successful enterprise software as a service products and solutions across startups, mid-sized companies, and of course, large enterprise. Chirag serves as, again, executive at Google, SAP, Oracle, and as a product leader overseeing engineering, product management, and design. He's consistently driven revenue growth and product innovation. Chirag's holistic research that he's bringing to Constellation on cybersecurity is grounded in a reality that as sophisticated AI-led attacks become increasingly prevalent, and as organizations aspire to empower their workforce to work from anywhere and access all their data and applications on whatever preferred devices they have, CISOs and CIOs are facing challenges to just really reimagine the cybersecurity landscape in a hybrid computing world. Chirag helps, as I mentioned, chief product officers, chief technology officers, and CIOs to strike a balance where they can continue to solve critical problems, but at the same time delight their customers and stakeholders who have ever-growing demands in terms of how they access this data and how they serve their stakeholders. You can follow Chirag on Twitter at Chirag_Mehta, M-E-H-T-A. Welcome, Chirag, to the Shrug TV.
Thank you. Great to be on the show.
Great to have you.
Yeah, we're happy to have you here. And I think, you know, we definitely get your enterprise cred chops here. And it's very, very important, as you know, to cybersecurity, have that enterprise cred chops. But talk a little bit about what is in your background that actually makes you be able to see the perspective, the end-to-end view, because you're doing something very different in coverage here, which is in cybersecurity, people go deep on SIEM or go big on SD-WAN or hit really hard on like, you know, SOCs and NOCs and all that kind of stuff. What are you doing differently here?
And why Constellation?
And why
Constellation? Because your street cred is such that you could have worked anywhere. Why Constellation?
So cybersecurity is a very broad topic. When you think about that, there are three main parts of cybersecurity. One which is very data-driven, like what kind of signal, what kind of data we have access to. Can we actually infer something from this data? Do we know when we are going to get attacked? Are we capable? Do we have capability and do we have framework in place to respond to these attacks? So that's one side. Second side is the human story. I mean, remember, systems don't attack systems, humans attack systems. And it's not the system's fault for attack, it's human fault for these attacks. So if you're not really empowering human beings to spot the phishing attempts and this deep sort of neurological, you know, side of the house where we human beings are inherently trustworthy. And cybersecurity is designed in the concept of zero trust, like you don't trust anything. No. So how do we deal with that? And that's the second part. And the third part is you go, that once something like this happens, what's going to be a response, right? Well, let's face it, we're all going to get breached. The attack is going to happen. How are you going to respond to that? What does that incident response kind of system look like? How are you going to go from that? So I have this horizontal background. I'm more of a generalist. And I have worked extensively, not just in sort of in different domains, from infrastructure to traditional enterprise software, functional domains. But I am a passionate design thinker who follows very user-centered design and put humans first in any approach. And the reason where we are right now is because it's we really need to humanize the problem. We need to elevate that cybersecurity is real so that we can defend against it.
Hey, you've even taught at Stanford's design school, right?
I did. So we have a deep connection with the Stanford D School, with the Hasso Plattner, who's the sort of co-founder of SAP, chairman of SAP, co-taught a class at Stanford D School, have deeper connections, have led numerous design thinking workshops, working with facilitators to bring a common understanding, bring technology and business leaders together to solve the right problems. And that's what we need. And I think that's what leads me to Constellation, which is how do we actually go help this really progressive CXOs in taking cybersecurity seriously? And the first challenge is just making sense out of what's going on. It's just a maze. And tools are all over the place. The problems are all over the place. And CXOs have been wondering what's going to be their approach. You cannot bring a knife to a gunfight. You can't actually have, we're going to get attacked and we're going to respond to that. That just not really work. You need to be proactive and you need to be more outcome-based. You need to be more risk-based. Let's look at what risk we have and how do we respond to that. And I'm very passionate about helping CXOs find their way and be organizations more secure. So that's the reason to be at Constellation.
Do you think that most companies are bringing a knife to a gunfight when they're dealing with multimodal foundational models that are creating threat vectors that are so real? Like, for example, if phishing continues to be top of list in terms of how you find employee vulnerabilities into business, what's the impact when you have incredibly realistic content that's created in order to attack companies? My sense is, and I don't want to dunk on companies, but unless you've been reskilling and re-modernizing your tech stack and creating red teams that really understand AI-powered threat vector, they are going to a gunfight with a water pistol.
You're not.
I guess that's
I like the water pistol. Yeah.
Yeah. It just means you're going to be really busy because I, and again, I'm not speaking to all companies, but I've seen enough companies where the red teams, the blue teams, and even the purple teams that are trying to prioritize what gets fixed are taking longer at assessing what they need to do because the tools are new and they're not quite familiar with what they're seeing.
You're right. Just think about the way I explained this thing, that the difference between network security, your multiple networks, the access that you have to SaaS applications, that perimeter is gone. You don't even know what your perimeter looks like because your employees are everywhere, your data is everywhere, your applications are everywhere. So when you think about AI and AI's role in creating a dynamic perimeter, that here is what is going on in my environment with my employees and with my end users who have been accessing these applications, business critical applications. So that is the dynamic AI perimeter that is actually going to help. And the reason we are seeing this rise of this AI, because some of these problems were not solvable by human beings. I don't want to say, hey, why bring a knife to a gunfight? Because you don't have a gun. You don't have anything. You don't have a head power. You never had a weapon that you could actually bring. Not that they actually want to bring a weapon, but now we do. So if the attacks are sophisticated, AI-driven attacks are sophisticated because access to AI and access to large-scale computing is fairly easy, you need to have a sophisticated response, which is an AI-driven response where you have telemetry, you are looking at your dynamic perimeter as to what is going on in my environment, and you are responding based on what your risk is.
I agree. I agree. You know, just want to follow up. Published a ZDNet article today on a 600 CIO survey where the number one demand on IT today is implementation of generative AI across 600 respondents, CIOs. But IT is pushing back because the demand is so high, the business is asking IT to perhaps lower their priority in terms of security, scalability, business value. So it's amazing the pressure that the line of business is applying to IT, where 9 out of the 10 CIOs who responded to the survey said the number one demand is providing solution to sales, service, marketing, commerce, customer-facing lines of business with solutions that are powered by generative AI, where 2023 was the year of experimentation, 2024 is year of adoption and use. Line of business leaders are not waiting 2 years for IT to get comfortable with generative AI because, frankly, we're 150 million consumer users of OpenAI. The employees are using the tools. They're already using it. Forget about what the governance is. They're using it and they're taking credit for the work. So what are some of the big ideas and research areas you're looking at when there's certainly a gravitational pull in the enterprise or any business of any size, where IT has a lot of pressure to balance those traditional priorities like security, which should be cybersecurity, in my opinion, should still be number one priority for CIOs because security is, or breach is a reputational brand that's a boardroom discussion now, or it has been for the last decade or so. What are some of the big areas you're looking at when you're thinking about this pull that's really providing some difficulty for folks in IT?
So what I generally share that I get asked, what is the return on investment? What's ROI of security? Well, there is none. It's not the ROI. Security is cost of doing business. Yeah. If you don't have security, you won't have business. And then you won't have ROI on anything else that you have invested into. And it's not very clear to most leaders that they need to invest into foundational technology so that they can actually have a business. They can actually go at super high speed and invest in generative AI and invest in everything else and digital transformation journey that they have embarked on and all the automation and everything that goes with that. But this is not an optional thing. So that's number one. Second thing is when you think about CFOs, CFOs go to jail if you make a mistake. The stock price changes to if you CFOs have a, you know, nothing but empathy for, that job, you could actually go to jail for saying wrong things or there's a mistake. And now that is getting into the CISO, CIO side of the house, that if you actually have a breach, breaches are being taken seriously. You have to investigate a breach. You have to figure out why, something happened and you actually have to produce a report and you have to report every single breach that is over a certain amount. And there are regulations that are very strong SEC regulations coming into place. So we want to make sure you have to do that. But that's not the message. You shouldn't wait to do something because you have to do that. Right. Use cybersecurity to your advantage and put business leader at ease so that they can invest into that.
That's actually a great point. How do we actually bring AI and cybersecurity together? I know that's like probably one of the hottest topics at the moment that you're looking at. Like, how does AI change cybersecurity? Let's start there.
The way AI changes cybersecurity, and if you go back to the cloud world, let's not forget cloud world. The reason we are here, and I like what you said, which is the cloud people sort of didn't take it seriously in the initial days. The people would not put the customer data. Now people are not even asking about, should I put customer data or not? It's kind of given. Cloud was a convergence for memory, storage, CPU, and network, right? These four things kind of came together. And now cloud has become an operating system. Now you add data and AI. Now that's what the X is what we have. And you are looking at the cyber OS. So the way the AI is actually going to help us with cybersecurity is, as I said, it's a dynamic perimeter. That's one of the things where you can actually model all the threat vectors that you have to what your defense kind of look like at any in any given situation. But also you're going to have access to a vast amount of data, telemetry, all the signal that you can analyze, and you can actually defend, including the behavior of your end users. You can defend against these attacks. So think about this thing as a cyber operating system. Cloud became an operating system, which is very akin to the operating system that we have seen from Microsoft and Apple. You just take it for granted. You open your Mac. You don't go and say, oh, which filer, you know, where's my filer to where's my UI, right? You go to cloud, you don't think about storage and compute being two different things. So when you are dealing with cybersecurity, why would you think about your network gateway being different than your endpoint protection, which is your antivirus or something else? So everything is getting closer to becoming a platform or becoming more of a cyber operating system. That's how AI is changing it.
How close do you think we are to perhaps a concept of autonomous cybersecurity, where vast majority or a percentage of threat mitigation does not involve humans or security experts, and the operating system just understands, identifies, and remediates in an autonomous fashion?
I don't have a crystal ball. I wish while I did. I would say that's the only way out. I have a background in site reliability injury. And when you have 5 nines of reliability, you get close to like 30 to 40 seconds. I should look it up exactly what. You get 40 seconds of downtime a year.
Right.
That means if a human has to respond, you can't have 5 nines.
You're done. Game over.
Right? Yeah. So the idea is that if human has to get involved when there's an attack, you're not going to scale.
No, you're right? Dead.
So that is, we have to get there. I don't know if it's going to take us a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. It's going to be a journey just like anything else. But that's the convergence I'm saying. We have to get there.
I don't know this to be true because I haven't been part of cybersecurity audit teams. But do companies reveal percentage of their cybersecurity mitigation that's autonomous in nature or automated? Is that something that's a standard reporting where you can actually? Okay.
Yeah, they don't have to. The SEC has started with regulations are still somewhat weaker to enforce. They're still sort of vague, but the people actually have to report breaches. Now imagine those breaches are going to go into your quarterly conference call, your investor call. So you are a CEO, you would have to talk about breaches. That's not a pleasant place to be in, but that's where we are.
Sure. Go ahead.
Yeah, we're operating at machine scale with humans. So
that's right.
It's going to be a very interesting world going forward. Now, you also look at products, Chirag, and I think, you know, how does this change the way we build products? When you think about product design, right? This is some of the things that you cover in terms of the state of the chief product officer.
Yeah, we think about chief product officer. Many chief product officers I have known, they have become glorified chief.
You've been the chief product officer for two companies.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And my fellow CPOs, when I talk to them, they have become glorified chief backlog officers because of who they are, but they were always limited by what engineering could produce.
Sure.
That limitation is going away when it comes to AI. So there's a gap between PX, which is product experience, and product experience and developer experience, PX to DX, it is becoming smaller and smaller and smaller. And gap between PX, DX, and CX, which is customer experience, it's even becoming smaller. So what you're going to see is faster feedback loops. We have in the past rewarded people who wrote great code. We didn't necessarily reward people who solved great problems or people, when I say people, they're all people, product managers, designers, engineers. We didn't necessarily reward people who had great imagination. Mm. That's what is going to happen now. Because you don't have to write code. The code will be written for you. The code will be secured by definition. That's another part of cybersecurity I focus on. But I'm really passionate about bridging the gap between design to deploy, how fast you can go from code to cloud, where you can build something in a day, you can ship on the same day, you can get feedback on the same day, you can revise that for 5 times, and the next day you are in production, you are live, customer actually gets a business value out of this thing. I think that's what is changing the life of Chief Product Officer.
Wise words from Chirag Mehta, VP and Principal Analyst, our newest minted analyst here. You can follow him at Chirag_Meta. And of course, welcome to the show and welcome to the family.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Chirag. That's awesome. I love having a design thinking professional who has brought product and services to market, consulting other practitioners. I believe if you don't have scar tissue, if you don't have battle scars, if you haven't built and shipped the product, frankly, I don't want your advice. as a former line of business owner, like, you know, if you're going to advise me, I need to know you've been to battle. And you've come out unscathed. You're still living.
That's what all our clients say. So we feel your
kudos. kudos to you, because I think as an analyst who's been a former practitioner, I think that's super important. Wow, what an episode. Ray, please, 30-second summary.
We're really out of time, and I'll do my best to actually summarize this. But I think the main thing is that when we talked to Teresa, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's required for change management. As we move to cloud and now to AI, we're seeing a big shift that's required. And a lot of organizations basically have to rethink what's important, how to align the incentives to get folks to make that move. Rhonda Viteri was sharing with us really some of the things that she was doing that actually helped get people motivated to actually adopt these new technologies. And especially given the fact that AI is here, we definitely need to do more of that. I think the secret might be more lunch and learns, but that will be in your own companies as well to kind of get you there. And of course, Dr. David Bray also sharing some of the important things that are required, especially when we're dealing in environments where you don't take risk. What do you actually do? Have to create the right incentives, make people feel safe to kind of get there. And then, of course, we wrapped with Chirag Mehta talking about cybersecurity, how it actually fits what's happening in a world of AI and cybersecurity, and more importantly, how we actually take products and rethink the way we look at products. So that's it, man. But I want 20 seconds from you about your trip to Spain. So,
no, let me just say, every time I speak to Rhonda, she reminds me all of us need to train like marathoners, but we need to also be able to run sprints. So this AI journey is a marathon, but you got to move fast.
We are in inning two. We're at the top of the second inning, and there's a lot more to go.
Exactly. And as great basketball coach John Wooden said, go fast, but don't hurry. You can't forego security and customer value and business, continuity. So
AI go fast. AI must be enterprise class. 1 + 1 = 3, or else you're in the wrong game. That would be gendered, and that's the problem.
Yeah, I totally agree. Okay, next week, episode, by the way, Spain was amazing, but I miss not being at Disrupt TV. That's my favorite thing to do every week. Episode 356 next week. We have, by the way, we've crossed 1,200 interviews during the history of our show, and we're approaching 400 episodes this year. Clint Oram, Chief Strategy Officer at Sugar CRM, will be our first guest. Patrick McGinnis, inventor of the term FOMO, creator of hit podcast FOMO Sapiens podcast, author of an international bestseller of Fear of Missing Out, FOMO. And of course, we have Elaine Lynn Herring, author of Unlearning Silence, How to Speak Your Mind, Unleash Talent, and Live More Fully. Remember, last year, 2023, we had 70 authors on our show, and we are well on our way of surpassing perhaps 70 authors this year. So if you want to learn from the best and brightest authors in the world, this is the place to go. If it's Friday, it's Disrupt TV. Thank you for all watching, and we'll see you next Friday. Bye, everyone.
Happy International Women's Day.
Yes.